Eric Wolfgang Korngold's theme for the Errol Flynn movie The Seahawk, music that Dorothy Hamill skated to. In fact, when the music came on, Dorothy put her hand to her heart. She achieved her dream by winning an Olympic gold medal in figure skating at age 19, but her life outside the rink has been far from perfect, and in her new memoir, Skating Life, which is published by Hyperion, she talks about living with depression and about growing up with an emotionally distant mother. I'm very pleased that the book has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, you wrote a memoir way back in 1983, Dorothy Hamill, On and Off the Ice. Were you a very different person then?
I was a very different person, and that was really for young adults, and it was more about sort of what it took as opposed to an emotional roller coaster. So this one, I was a very different person. I was, at that point, I think I was still thinking that life was going to be perfect.
It was all
going
to turn out okay, finally.
Yes, and I've had a charmed and blessed and amazing life so far. And but, you know, it's not what it all seems. You know, I thought by achieving my lifelong goal at 19 that everything would be simple after that. It doesn't work like that.
Were you at all reticent to share the difficult parts of your life with the public? A public that
yes.
knows you in a very specific way?
Yes, I was reticent. And halfway through, not even halfway through, after about 2 months, I began questioning whether I should continue or not. And then I felt, you know, I'm in a place where it's okay and it doesn't matter. And you know, I think for people to get help if they suffer from depression, or just to let people know that you can still achieve things when you have other issues, and, you know, because we all have problems and situations and things, you know, the cards we're dealt are the cards we have to play with. And so I'm okay with it. Yeah. I'm not embarrassed or ashamed.
Well, you're not alone
anymore
in having this kind of experience. And in fact, you almost seem preordained to have had depression. Both your parents suffered from depression. Were you,
yes.
Was that something that was obvious at the time?
No, it wasn't. And of course, it wasn't really diagnosed back during my parents' generation. And I think they self-medicated with, you know, alcohol and my mother, I mean, bless her heart, she changed her whole life and her whole being for me. And when I look back, I mean, her brother suffered enormously from alcoholism and depression since he's been sober. My father's two brothers committed suicide. I mean, there's just a lot of it there. So being able to understand it and then being able to face it, and I don't think I would have faced it had I not had my second divorce and a personal bankruptcy. And that's when I really realized, you know, there are a lot of things going on here that I need help with.
Well, committing yourself to a goal, and I don't know whether you were committed from the start to being in the Olympics, but a family committing itself to Dorothy really doing well as a skater can get you past an awful lot of those problems until
yes.
you sit alone for a while and the depression sets in.
That's true. That's true, because, you know, skating, and up until I was 19 in the Olympics, I probably had some minor bouts of depression, but you're right.
All kids have depression, and so it wouldn't have seemed unusual,
right? I suppose that's true. But I had this love, this sort of passion for figure skating, and I was not a good student, so I knew that, you know, I had to figure out something that I could do with my life. And so their skating took up a lot of that energy. And, you know, my parents sacrificed an enormous amount for me, and my brother and sister went without a lot. So, you know, and as a parent now, I have a great appreciation for, you know, what my parents did for me so that I could achieve, you know, my dream. So
economic, a lot, because you didn't come from a wealthy family.
Didn't come from a wealthy family, but we didn't really know that much, because we had, you know, a beautiful life and great grandparents. My grandparents were amazing, or my mother's parents. I really didn't know my father's parents too much, but But the financial part of it wasn't so much. I mean, obviously, it seemed to be a nice thing, and you always dream that that will make your life happy. But I did learn that down the road a piece that that really doesn't, you know, doesn't do it for you. But I was just lucky that I had something that kind of saw me through the ups and the downs.
Well, you were pretty serious by the time you were nine. When had you started skating?
I started actually when I was 8 and a half on a pond, and I fell in love with, you know, the wind at my face and the movement, and I was painfully shy, so it was just a place that I could express myself and maybe in some ways be away from home and my parents, you know, difficult relationship with each other. And then I started, I think when I was about 12 is when I really thought, you know, this is something I want to take seriously, and I really love competition, and I really got involved at about 12.
Where had you grown up?
I grew up in Riverside, Connecticut. And
so there were frozen ponds in Riverside, Connecticut?
There were in those days. Occasionally they freeze now.
Before global warming.
Well, I know. It's a shame.
You went from coach to coach. I guess as you realized that you were better than other skaters, the quality of the coaches kept on getting higher and higher. You spent your summers at Lake Placid, and that's where things really turned around for you, in that old Olympic skating rink?
Good old Olympic Arena in Lake Placid, yes. My mother saw to it that I went from coach to coach because she was trying to figure out how it worked, and when you got to a certain level, you needed a different coach, and Lake Placid was just, it was summer camp for me, and I sort of felt as though I owned the town. I had the most wonderful group of girlfriends, and it wasn't just skating, although it was 7 hours of skating a day, walking around the town and the lake, and it was just this wonderful closeness of friends and coaches and the whole skating community. It was, people came from all over the country and all over North America to skate in Lake Placid during the summertime. We had Saturday night shows, and we'd go out for ice cream afterwards. It was really a magical, magical time.
How much is success in skating dependent on physical ability, and how much is just hard work? Because I'm sure there were other kids working just as hard as you.
And more talented.
Were they more talented?
Oh, yes. Think? Yes, yes, yes.
Is it a mental thing? Because we see some pretty great skaters do, fall during major events again and again, and you wonder just how much of it is a mental thing.
I think for some people it just is a mental thing. For me, I know that when I skated well, it was because I was so prepared that I was almost overly prepared. I had to know that if I completely lost concentration, it would just happen automatically. And
did that ever happen?
That it happened automatically when I lost concentration?
Did you lose concentration? I would think that's one time when you're really focused.
Believe it or not, most of the time when I skated my best performances, I was thinking of something completely different than what I was doing. And, you know, to me, that was what was called the zone. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you'd have been too self-conscious, perhaps? You know, maybe. Oh, gee, where's my leg right now? It's like thinking about breathing. Suddenly, you don't breathe naturally.
I think for me, that was true. I don't know, you know, for other skaters, performers, you know, you have that 4 minutes. And the first 30 seconds, you can barely stand up. You know, I was always hyperventilating. And then after the first couple of jumps, you relax a little bit. But also in those days, we never really took huge risks because if you fell, that was it. Nowadays, it's a little different. They really have to take risks. But if we didn't have a jump perfected 9 times out of 10, it was never put in the routine.
What about the development of your signature move, the Hamel Camel? That was a risk, wasn't it?
No, that was fun. Spinning was always my thing. I had the best spinning coach in the world, Gus Lucy. And he was the one who sort of created the Hamel Camel. And he was not a skater, so he was just describing it to me and explaining how he would like me to try and do this spin. And apparently it wasn't exactly what he wanted, but everybody liked it. And I actually don't happen to think it's that attractive. But anyway, it became a sort of trademark signature move. And
And is that important, coming up with some kind of trademark, something where people recognize you immediately? Because there was also, of course, the wedge cut hairdo, and people would see you and immediately know it was you. And other dancers have done, I mean, other skaters have done similar things. But do you think that's part of it in the minds of the judges, that you have somebody who's a kind of a living logo?
Well, I don't think so. I think that just kind of happened by chance. And I really don't. I mean, those judges had seen me with my short hair forever. And it was just one of those times being in the right place at the right time. And you just really never know. So it was not a conscious decision. It was just I was trying to find a haircut that looked nice on me with short hair.
So you won the gold medal at age 19. To some degree, that there was also the factor of the plane crash that killed the U.S. figure skating team.
Yes.
You probably moved up the ladder rather quickly as a result of that.
I think Peggy Fleming really benefited from that, and she was gorgeous. But
and a great skater.
Oh, beautiful, absolutely, and she was by far the best. But I think 1961 was the plane crash, and
you were so many years later.
Yeah, I was about two generations later. Most of those skaters would probably have either retired or turned professional or started teaching. So.
Is that what you did after you won the Olympics?
I turned professional, because in those days we were amateur athletes, and it was just like a switch going off. My life changed instantly. I went from not ever having to give interviews or press conferences and not having any money to lawyers and agents and managers and Hollywood and choreographers and costume designers. And, you know, all of a sudden it was professional, 13 shows a week, traveling every week to a new city. And I was a circus performer. And that was really hard. I missed all the training. I still had this Olympic appetite. And I think that's really the first bout of real depression that I remember. Here I should be on top of the world with everything that I ever dreamed of. And I couldn't move.
My guest is Dorothy Hamel, who's written a memoir called A Skating Life. It is published by Hyperion. Well, now you were making money, as you said. But how did you get funding before? Today, you can be a professional and still be an amateur. You can still be in the Olympics.
Yes.
But did you have to go out and did people have to go out and get money to support your travels, your training, and all the rest?
Technically, they weren't really allowed to support. There were a few individual sponsors who could donate money to the Memorial Fund, which is part of what used to be the United States Figure Skating Association. And then they would sort of dole it out. The association would take a big percentage of it, and then they would dole out a little bit here and there. And fortunately, there were a couple of, you know, very kind and very generous people that, you know, would fly my mother to the Olympics or my sister, and they'd pay for a few lessons here and there. But by the time I turned professional, my father was so far in debt. You know, it was all they could do to keep from, you know, taking him off to jail for not paying income taxes. So it was just the most wonderful thing to be able to reimburse my parents for that when the time came, and I could, you know, I could take care of that and get my dad.
You have summer seasonal affective disorder. Most people get SAD or SAD in the winter when there's less sunlight.
It's true. Yes, I am. And that's what I've said. I don't know if I found skating or if skating found me, but there's something about this time of year and the changing of the leaves and the cool weather that I find just invigorating. It's my time of year. I love it.
Are you grateful that you came along at a time when there wasn't as much attention paid? Your Olympic performance wasn't even on live television.
Right.
Today, of course, that would be unheard of.
Yes.
But Was there less pressure? You say suddenly all the pressure was when you went pro.
Yes. Yes, I had pressure on myself, and of course I wanted to do well. And I am very grateful that I'm not, and thankful that I'm not competing today. These youngsters have so much pressure on them that I don't think I could have handled that.
Well, the Ice Capades.
Media,
so. The Ice Capades was probably a lot of fun, but now you're facing bouts of depression, and you meet your first husband, Dean Paul Martin. Mm. He's a competitive tennis player, so you're two athletes.
Yes.
Perhaps he understood the kind of pressures that you had to overcome to succeed in skating. And you're right, he was the love of your life, and you had a fairy tale Hollywood wedding. So what happened?
Yes. Well, when we were married only for a year and a half, we'd been dating 8 years, and we got married, and he was coming back from his pilot training from the Air Force, and he was going into the Air National Guard, and he was trying to figure out how he was going to make a living. You know, he would never take anything from his father that people thought he would. And he was very unsettled. And I was at the point where I'd skated with Ice Capades for 8 years, and we were married, and I wanted to settle down and have children. And so we were really at very different times in our life, and it just, you know, it wasn't that we didn't love one another. It was just that he wasn't ready to settle down because he wanted to be able to support a family and a wife, and I was, you know, I just wanted to settle down and do something more with life. And so I came home one day and he said, you know, I don't want to be married anymore.
And then not long after your divorce, he died.
Yes.
He died suddenly.
Yes.
You were married, had a daughter, Alexandra. Mm-hmm. And what happened to your relationship to her father, Ken Forsythe?
Well, that was, very complicated.
We're running out of time.
Okay,
so.
We got a divorce, and he'd been.
But you bought the Ice Capades, which was in bankruptcy, and were you able to turn it around?
We turned it around, and then we had to sell it because our financial partner got into some trouble with his other companies and needed to find somebody to buy him out. And in the meantime, I was funding them with my own money, and so
more strain on a marriage.
Yeah, yeah. And then the infidelities, and it just, I had to save my soul and for my daughter's sake as well.
You're still skating.
I am.
So is that the thing that keeps you, forgive me for making a pun, in balance?
Yes, I think so. It seems to be. It's always been there for me, and as long as, you know, my health holds up, I think it always will be there some way.
Well, I'm glad that things all seem to be working out now.
So
and I thank you so much for being with us, Dorothy Hamill. Her memoir, Skating Life, is published by Hyperion, written with the help of Deborah Amelon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to be.
And Dorothy Hamill will be, where are you going to be? You're going to be at
Greenwich, Connecticut.
Signing books at Greenwich Library, 101 West Putnam Avenue in Greenwich, Connecticut, today at 7 p.m.
You got it.